Hey, Steve, guess what? Yesterday, because today's May 4th when we're recording.
Get out.
Yeah.
Oh, we're playing that game? Okay.
Yeah, we're playing that game and we're releasing it early because it's going to leak in the past.
All right.
Since today is May the 4th, that means yesterday Godzilla Minus One came out on Amazon Prime. And it is awesome. And you should watch it.
Okay. Is it any different than any other Kong or Godzilla movie that we've seen in the last 15 years?
1,000%, because all of the ones you've seen, because I know you haven't seen any of the Japanese ones, like Shin Godzilla, it is way different. It is actually good.
This is kind of like asking me, like, hey, which one of the Transformers movies is the best? I'm like, isn't it like 15 hours of just one film?
What if somebody was like, okay, which one of the Transformers movies is best? And then the answer was Pacific Rim. Welcome back to the Gunga Beach podcast. My name is Brett, and I am here with outspoken governor and early detector of the invasion on Naboo, Steve McMahon.
Yo!
Steve, how are you, and who did I just reference?
I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right, yeah.
I'm having a good one so far.
Early detector of the invasion on Naboo?
Is that like, I don't know. That
it can only mean one thing?
That bald
communications disruption?
Yeah, the bald-headed guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I never remember that guy's name.
He's got hair on the sides.
Okay, I want to say, and I absolutely know it's wrong, but for some reason the name Cy Snoodles is in my head. But I want to say it's like only Cy something and not Snoodles.
You're on the right track. I'm going to give you partial credit. It is, no, let's do a Jeopardy style. Who is C.O. Bibble?
C.O. Bibble. Thank you, George. Thank you, George.
Thank you, George.
C.O. Bibble.
Has a name ever not matched the face as much as C.O. Bibble?
I guess.
I love that guy. I love how many people in The Phantom Menace are really good at identifying very obvious things.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of those backseat drivers. Hey, there's a red light coming.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Nice.
He's one
it.
Of those guys where everybody's like ready to move on. Like, all right, guys, I think we came up with a solid strategy here. And he's like, but wait.
There's more.
Like when you're on a Zoom meeting at work and everybody's like, hey,
oh,
I think we can wrap up a little early today and everybody can get a few minutes of their life back. And then there's that one dude.
Yeah.
But sir, you forgot to give us homework for the school vacation week.
Does anybody have any final thoughts, questions?
Right. Like, any more questions before we all head to lunch?
Yeah.
Steve, this is our very special second annual May the 4th episode. It was supposed to be more special. We were supposed to have a special guest today, but things did not work out. But the silver lining is something much more exciting is coming down the road, but we're not going to talk about it yet. That's just a little tease, Steve. Steve, how do you feel about the May the 4th holiday?
Look, if you're into a meaningless play on words that never had anything to do with the release of a film, a show, or anything that George ever did, be my guest.
You saying that, and you said that last time, and I think you said that last year.
I will say it for the rest of time.
Yes.
And I said it in an elevator at work to two people who were like kind of excited or feigning excitement for something that I love.
Right.
And instead of like leaning into it.
Yeah.
I like a curmudgeon just like, you know, crap all over it.
Well, see, the more you say it, like, it's really crept in. It's like when you start singing Party in the USA and then it's stuck in your head for the rest of the day.
Okay. Yep.
Steve, just like last time, we're totally recording on the day that we're celebrating, like when we celebrated our first anniversary on April 10th.
We record and we drop.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
Now, what would be unfortunate is if we recorded this episode today on May 4th and somehow it leaked in the past on like May 1st, May 2nd. That would be weird, but I guess it can't be ruled out.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, little detour. I was recently looking back at some of my notes from 2 years ago, apparently. And do you know what I saw?
I can't read your mind.
I saw my notes about the first episode of Kenobi. And I was like, I love this. This is wonderful.
You didn't write that.
I really did. And some of it, what I stand by and why I think I was duped, is because I was like, the tone of the show is great. It's kind of mellow. It's a little solemn. I was totally duped. Yeah. Not anymore. We don't get duped anymore. Like, you know, my detector was at the ready when Ahsoka dropped.
I've come to the conclusion that I'm just going to remember the things that I liked about it and move on.
Yeah. Like the first 10 minutes of the first episode, I really enjoyed it. And then I'd probably skip to the last
when he was at that bizarre Tatooine deli cutting meat.
Yeah.
Whatever that was.
Yeah, that was the best.
I mean, I liked it.
Obi-Wan sashimi. I thought that was really cool. You know, he was given the right level of melancholy for that stage of his life.
I mean, not to dive too far into that, but do you think at that point in his life, how old was Leia now, Luke and Leia?
She looked like she was 5, but she talked like she was 34.
Yeah, so he had a number of years on that planet already.
Right. He should have been really good at Sabacc by then.
Oh, yeah.
Like, isn't that how he should have been making money?
As a gambler, as a trickster?
Yeah. I mean, Omega did it in, like, maybe 5 minutes of The Bad Batch.
Well, you know, there's a certain kind of believability exchange rate from animation to live action.
You're right.
I think they leaned into the melancholy a little too much.
Yeah.
Like, he is this, like, multi-year funk.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Those were his pandemic years, Steve.
He was quarantined.
He was never the same. Before we get into our main topics for today, Steve, here's where you can find us on social media, inserting new pre-recorded clip now. Subscribe to this show and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are sold. Follow me at Gunga Beach on Twitter and at Gunga_Beach_Design on Instagram, where you can also find out about my Star Wars-inspired merchables, namely Star Wars enamel pins, and by the way, 2 new Phantom Menace-inspired enamel pins will be coming very soon to the shop, and I think they came out great. I hope you like them too, so stay tuned for that. You can also purchase said merchables at Etsy.com/shop/GungaBeach, or just search for Gunga Beach. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveMac79 or on Facebook, where he lurks about in the Alliance of Star Wars Fanatics Facebook group, which you should join immediately. Steve.
Yeah.
Speaking of The Acolyte.
I love The Acolyte, and I haven't seen it yet. What's nice about The Acolyte, just right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah.
We are now 30 days away.
Right.
From the dropping of The Acolyte.
Because it's a month from today, May 4th. Yes, we are.
Correct. That's kind of exciting. It's crept up on me. It's crept up on me.
You know what else is great about it, Steve, is that we haven't seen it yet. So it only lives in our minds as this amazing, yes, amazing show, much like The Phantom Menace when we had only seen the trailer. With The Acolyte, Steve, I think we should introduce a new segment on the show. Something I'm calling Baguette Watch. The Acolyte. Will it be a baguette or more of a chocolate croissant?
I think it's going to be more chocolate croissant.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little fancier than your standard American fare.
Right, but not like zany and deep fried.
Right, no, right. Not there.
Yeah.
But also not like you're not going to eat it with your pinky out, you know?
It's probably not.
It's not going to quite be Andor levels baguette.
Right.
So what do you think? You think we should bring back Baguette Watch every week, Steve? And maybe like categorize things and where they are between American and French pastry?
We could. Yes.
Steve, let's get into the real topic for today. What we're really here to talk about, which is the 25th anniversary.
Oh, no. Dude.
Yes?
I watched The Bad Batch.
Wait.
Yes.
You caught up on The Bad Batch. Like, weren't you like 12 episodes behind?
Yeah, I was the whole season behind. It's 14 episodes now.
Okay.
But last night, I sat down and watched the latest episode.
Just the latest episode?
Yeah, so I still got like the first 13 to go. But I watched the latest episode.
Steve, that would be like high levels of masochism if you cared about The Bad Batch.
Yeah, but it worked out perfectly. They're on a mission to save Omega from something.
Are you sure that wasn't episode one or two or three or four or five?
My point exactly.
Yeah, right. Okay.
All right. What I'm going to do is go on the internet and find out which episode Adventure's in it.
Yeah.
And watch that one.
Okay.
And then I'll watch the finale.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, good to go.
Ventress appeared like a mist and then was no more.
Like a fart in the wind.
Like a force-wielding fart in the wind. Were this not our May the Force special, that would be the name of this episode.
A fart in the wind?
Yeah. A force-wielding yes. fart in the wind. Yeah. Yes. Well, so what did you think? And did you feel like you missed out by skipping 13 episodes?
I do not think I missed out.
Okay.
Eventually I will see the other ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, eventually I will finish season two.
Right.
But it was fun. When the episode ended, I'm like, what?
Really?
They didn't do anything.
Oh.
The episode just ended. I'm like,
Yeah.
Did you watch it?
Well, today is May 4th. Of course, I'm all caught up, Steve. And
you're not caught up.
That finale, I mean, wow. Right?
Oh, I might have another episode to go then.
Yeah.
I think I have another episode to watch.
Yeah, you do.
Now I watched 14, Flashpoint.
I was going with that thing where we're like, it's already May 4th, right? Because it totally is.
I know. But then I played it as if that was the brand new one.
But let's keep playing it, Steve, because like I'm pretty sure we could successfully review the finale right now just by saying some things like, wow, you know, that was, talk about tugging on the heartstrings, Steve.
Yeah.
What did you think of that that shootout in the corridor?
Shoot out in the corridor.
Yeah, you know, we're all the clones, you know, we're a bad batch.
Hold on, let me queue up every episode they ever made of the show and try to categorize.
No. The one in the corridor shootouts. Where they're like shooting back and forth with stormtroopers and nobody in the bad batch is getting hit, but all the stormtroopers are.
Well, that's because the bad batch, they had real marksmanship training.
Right. Well, that's true.
And the stormtroopers themselves, especially the ones in that show, didn't get any training.
That's right.
In fact, they might be shooting blanks.
They're like, are they like middle-aged? But in this finale, the other thing I was really blown away by was that reunion, you know, with that one person. That was really, you know, touching.
I love that part.
Yeah.
Always. Every episode, I love that.
Yeah. I feel like it raises, you know, in some ways more questions than answers.
Yeah, I don't feel like we got the closure we deserved.
No, I don't think so. I think they're really, they're just really setting the table for the next animated series. Who knows what that'll be? But, okay, here's a real question, Steve.
Yep.
I'm just assuming, right, there's going to be another Star Wars animated series because we went from Clone Wars, then we had Rebels.
I'd be disappointed if there wasn't.
Right.
I will be disappointed if it is a continuation of the Clones.
I know.
Could we not do this a fourth time or whatever?
Yeah.
Let's move on. Let's put it after Return of the Jedi, just a little bit. Get it out there.
Wasn't it rumored a while ago that there would be like a post Return of the Jedi Luke Training Academy animated series? I feel like that goes back to like when Rebels
ended. I did hear that.
Right?
I did hear that.
I would much rather, if you're going to CG Luke anyways, make it an animated show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Steve, I'm really glad you caught up on The Bad Batch with that one episode.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm excited for what's coming next.
You know, Steve, you got to do that sometime. This is like real advice for the Gunga Beach Bums, right? Like, I remember trying to get into Parks and Rec at one point. And I, of course, I'm like, I have to start from the beginning, right? Like, I have to start from the first.
Mm-hmm.
And I slogged through several episodes and gave up. And...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Then people at work were like, just nonstop talking about Parks and Rec and just telling me how much they're like, I can't believe you haven't seen this because this just seems like something you would love. And I told them like, hey, couldn't get past the first batch of season one episodes, you know? And they were like, you know what? It really gets amazing in season two. And eventually I was like, you know what? I'm either never going to watch this show and never understand why people love it so much, or I'm going to just have to start in season two and skip everything in season one. And it was the best thing I ever did. And I ended up watching, you know, the whole thing two or three times, always starting from season two. Anyway, Steve, let's get into our real main topic for today, which is the 25th anniversary of the now adored episode one, The Phantom Menace.
Thank you.
first released on May 19th, not May 4th, May 19th, 1999. Steve, when did you first see The Phantom Menace, and how many times?
How many times I can't, in its theater run, I don't recall how many times I saw that film.
Yeah.
But it was definitely opening night.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Lowell, Showcase Cinema. I remember specifically stadium seating in the theater, which was new for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember anything else, though.
Okay. How did you feel about it at the time? Were you, like, blown away? Were you disappointed?
I thought it was awesome. Okay. But I do that with every theater showing right out of the gate.
Right.
Except for The Rise of Skywalker.
Wow.
I remember walking out of that film not having any negatives about, you know, everything that people like to dump on about it.
Right. Were you like a studious fan? Were you like reading anything that was coming out about the movie before you saw it? Were you reading?
Not even a little. Okay. I had no idea. Okay. I mean, yes, we had the internet already and stuff. It was 1999.
Yeah.
But
dial up.
There was no social media. I had no idea.
Right. Wow. So, Steve, you really had like sort of like the pristine ideal, you know. So for me, it was very different. I remember at the time reading, I believe it was Newsweek. Was like the first review. And I remember specifically, this is what really stands out in my mind, is this reviewer was just like, guys, it's bad. And if you're a Star Wars fan, I know you're going to see it anyways. I know you can't take my word for it. You have to go see it, but trust me, it's not good. And that was like the first thing I heard, which was awful because I remember, in the early days of dial-up internet, my first experiences with the internet were trying to find bootleg photos of the set from Phantom Menace. There was a website where a guy was like, what is the site now, Making Star Wars? Who they're just like, hey, we like camped out behind a fence next to the lot where Lucasfilm wheels in props to whatever they're shooting. And so like somebody was taking pictures from a distance and actually had like was uploading. And again, when you would access this website, these images would load literally line by line, like pixel by pixel. Right. So it took a long time to get a really bad photograph of pod racers, but you couldn't even see them as I remember it. Like they were covered.
Totally bogging down your router.
I was doing this in college, so presumably they had like better bandwidth or whatever, but I think I was still bogging it down for the entire floor. Just trying to get pics of this pod race, whatever that is.
You know what? Those same pictures still happen today.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
They just load faster.
Oh, they load way faster. Yeah. Instantaneously almost. So that was my thing. I was obsessed. I was absolutely obsessed. I was like, oh, this is the return of George Lucas. He's going to blow everybody away again. And I remember my cousin's husband, who was older and wiser, being like, you know, he hasn't made a movie in a long time. And so he was very skeptical. Like, I don't know if this is going to be everything you think. This isn't going to be the phenomenon that Star Wars was for us back in 1977. I'm like, no, man, you're wrong. This is going to be my generation's, you know, 1977. In 1999. So when I did go to see it, here's the amazing thing, Steve. You blew me away when you said where you saw it, because that's exactly where I saw it.
You really did?
I really did. And the funny thing is I saw it.
Opening night in Lowell?
I saw it opening morning and opening night in Lowell. I found my old ticket stubs recently, Steve, and it turns out I saw The Phantom Menace in theaters 3 times.
Okay.
Which is crazy because I was disappointed. But I also, I think I'm a movie fan in the same way I'm a sports fan. I was like, oh, that's too bad. But you know what was not that bad? And then I start to sort of rationalize and tell myself, like, no, I actually really liked it. But I kind of knew that I knew something was missing. I knew it wasn't like, you know, the dialogue wasn't great. And I didn't really feel like pumped at the end.
Well, it was bittersweet because, you know, throughout the film, you kind of fall in love with Qui-Gon.
Yes.
Then you gutted like he was.
Now, Steve, here's the funny thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward these 25 years. Like, I can't. Steve, I'm going to see it today, May 4th. And I just.
No, you're not. You're going to a baby shower.
Yeah, you know I. Oh, you're right. Oh, yeah. All right. I'm not seeing it today because somebody decided to plan a baby shower on the wrong day.
Awful.
I went to see it last night with my daughter. And man, I was just, and I was so excited, Steve. Back about a week ago, I just remember feeling super duper excited to watch it again. And actually, for the past few weeks, Steve, anytime I'm on Disney Plus, I'm like, man, I really want to watch Phantom Menace again. Which, by the way,
yeah,
when I see the Phantom Menace on Disney Plus and I want to watch it, I remember that, no, I should put in the Blu-ray instead. And then I watch it on Blu-ray. Which is,
why would you do that?
Because it's better. By the way, Rui hates physical media. He's just crap tweeting physical media all the time.
There's not enough time in the world to talk about the amount of things that Rui hates.
That's a fact. Like winning playoff hockey.
Yeah, winning playoff hockey.
Yeah.
You know,
hates it.
Yeah. The Leafs already eliminated from playoffs.
Yeah.
One and done again.
Yep, of course. Anyway, Steve, the perception around the Phantom Menace has changed so much over the years, right? So here's my question. You know, I feel like this is happening with movies a lot nowadays, right?
You're talking about the change of perception that people like it more now than they did years ago?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. It's okay. Like the relitigation of movies over the years, right? And so I feel like, is it revisionist? Is it just internet contrarianism? Or is it something else? So the movie itself, Steve, obviously it doesn't have, to me, what was always missing, it's not like a gripping, thrilling tale of intrigue. The script is not good. The acting is not believable. Characters don't really have a lot of chemistry with each other.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
But I think what's changed over the years, I like to think it's more than just people being contrarians on the internet. I think people have realized that we just love people. And we love seeing things that people created, you know? And so I think when people look at it, when I look at it now, I just look at it like as an overall package. I'm like, okay, the story may be boring. Like, I think you could, if it were not for the John Williams score, you could watch The Phantom Menace on mute and you would not be missing much, except for Rick Ollie's amazing blockade identification skills. But like, I think we just...
Theobibble?
Like,
who's Rick Ollie?
Rick Ollie, he's the one who's just like, there's the blockade. Thanks, Rick.
Hold on. Are C.O. Bibble and Rick Ollie the same person?
No, these are two different people.
Oh, is he the one that said, oh, he did it?
That's the one.
All right.
That's the guy. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think we just like to see people do things, especially in fictional universes, in gorgeous, artful settings, which, you know, to me, the whole thing with The Phantom Menace, Steve, is just like, it is a branding masterpiece. I mean, the toy drive when that movie came out was just pure insanity. And people have such an affinity for it still to this day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I guess I'm just saying, I think the movie now is as much about Ewan McGregor, Natalie Portman, Jake Lloyd, Ahmed Best. You know, like, I think people love people. People are happy for, like, their story.
Sure.
It's kind of like when you watch sports, right? Like, it's not just about the game and who the teams are. It's like the stories behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're watching the Super Bowl, they're going to spend like 3 hours on how Travis Kelce helped his aunt's best friend move or something, you know?
Or like the roller coaster journey that Ahmed Best has been on.
Yeah.
Since
yeah.
The Phantom Menace and how he's been featured in Star Wars stuff
mm-hmm.
as an actor.
Right.
Now he's back and beloved.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, if the affinity for the film has grown only because The Rise of Skywalker was so bad.
They you look think at it's that grown even say, in the wow, last 5 years you know because what? Of The Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah. Like, you know what? That was pretty good.
Give me The Phantom Menace any day.
TPM, baby.
Yeah. So in honor of The Phantom Menace 25th anniversary, we're finally getting around. Because, Steve, I do go back and listen to our original episode sometimes, and I listen to all the promises that I made that we've never fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
But here's one that we're actually going to follow through on, which is the Star Wars Hall of Fame. So this is something we're introducing. Steve and I have been talking a little bit about the parameters for the Hall of Fame, the Star Wars Hall of Fame. Now, Hall of Fame, as most listeners know, in sports... Sports Hall of Fames are very exclusive. Steve, I looked this up and it's something like 1% of athletes in a given sport make it into the Hall of Fame. I think it might even be less than 1%. So it's like really, really exclusive, really stringent criteria for something to actually make it into the Hall of Fame. And I think, you know, I think we find something somewhere in between for Star Wars. So my thing that I propose to Steve is for the Star Wars films, and we'll start there, and we'll have different criteria for animated series, for live action series. But for the films, there's 11 films.
Mm-hmm.
So my proposal is that only three should make it into the Star Wars Hall of Fame. I don't want it to be one, because that just doesn't seem right.
Sure.
99% mm-hmm. of people would just put Empire in there as the one entry, but I don't think that's right. I think we should have at least three.
No, that's good. That's good. I agree with that.
Now, here's my thing, Steve, okay? So here how we're going to do this is, whenever we nominate something for the Hall, Steve and I will discuss its merits and we'll vote on it. If we agree, it makes it into the Hall. If we disagree, then we have to defer to a third party, which could be a special guest. But it could also be the Goonga Beach Bums who listen to this podcast, all 15 of them.
They might not be able to be trusted.
I don't know. Well, so here... I guess
we kind of have to, though. We kind of have to.
If we defer to the fans, the fan vote would have to be over a certain percentage. It can't be like 51% of fans think this belongs in the Hall of Fame, right?
Right.
That would not be enough. It has to be like at least 80%, maybe 90%.
Okay. Look, Baseball Writers Association of America.
Yeah.
75% or greater. You got to get to 75 to be a Hall of Fame member. So yes, maybe it should be higher.
I think so.
80, 85, 90. Okay.
Let's say at least 90 for now, Steve, in honor of the 90s, which produced The Phantom Menace, the greatest Clever. 90s movie of all time.
Correct.
So Steve, we're saying that we're going to allow three entries. So of course, this is like all the saga films plus Solo and Rogue One. I know Solo's not getting in because Steve would never vote for it.
Look, if there was some kind of campaign, if there was some kind of campaign and a Goonga Beach Bum decided to try to drive the fan vote.
To push.
Although if we say it would never get in, would it even get to a fan vote?
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe we'll have to rethink that. So like if I say Solo belongs in the Star Wars Hall of Fame, which I'm not, so this is a moot point. But if I did
mm-hmm.
and you said no, do we then take it to the fans? Well, yeah, I guess that's what we're saying. If we vote something in unanimously, it's in. If we vote okay. something out unanimously, it's out. But if we're split,
it goes to the fans.
It can go to the fan vote. Yeah. So here's the challenge. We've got three movies that can make it. I think I would say, Steve, Empire is a lock.
That's a solid assumption.
It's hard to say that like A New Hope, like do you really say no to A New Hope? And then that makes things really difficult, right? Because then you can only get one more. Now, I'm fairly confident nobody would vote in any of the sequel trilogy. Okay. So that kind of narrows things down a bit. Where it really gets dicey then, there's yeah. Rogue One, which is a real black horse, right?
We'll say dark horse. Black horse isn't a thing. It's dark horse.
Here's a way to think about it, right? Is it a movie that some people would say is their favorite? And when you think about it, there's not many of those. Like, I don't know anyone who says Attack of the Clones is my favorite Star Wars. I don't know anybody who says any of the sequel trilogy is their favorite.
Like out of the 11.
Out of the 11.
Top banana. No, you're right.
Right?
I haven't seen that much either.
So I think you really have like five nominees out of the 11 movies.
Mm-hmm.
You've got New Hope, Empire, Rogue One, The Dark Horse. And then out of the prequels, you've got Phantom Menace and Revenge of the Sith. And now you and I both said that we both like Phantom Menace more than Revenge of the Sith.
I'm a Phantom Menace guy.
But you know how many people say Revenge of the Sith is their favorite Star Wars movie?
I get it. I get it.
So with all that in mind,
yeah,
how do we feel about Phantom Menace and the Star Wars Hall of Fame? How would you vote, Steve?
I'd probably vote no.
Yeah. Oh, man. And that hurts, doesn't it?
It does.
This is our way of celebrating the 25th anniversary is to vote it down.
We keep it out of the Goonga Beach Hall of Fame.
Oh, man. I think you're right.
Look.
Yeah.
I'm quickly realizing a possible dilemma I have in this Hall of Fame format. I might have to reevaluate my own style of voting here.
Well, okay. You know what? How about this? I think we need to pause it. I think we need to pause this deliberation right now.
Okay.
Until later in this month, okay? And what we're going
to
do...
I'll talk to Rui about this.
How about we put it up for fan vote? And if the fan vote surpasses the 90% threshold, then we have to consider it for the Hall.
It's not a vote to get into the Hall.
Yeah.
It's just a vote to be considered for the Hall. It's a nomination.
Yeah.
Just because you're nominated doesn't mean you're in.
Steve, how did I not see this that you have just given us the best solution to all of this, is that like the fans should always have to nominate something to be considered?
Sure.
We could go that route.
Yep.
So anyway, Steve, I think what we're going to do is we're going to let the fans decide the Phantom Menace's fate.
Sure.
And then we will let people know the results on May 19th, 2024, 25 years.
Okay.
To the day of the release of The Phantom Menace.
May 19th.
May 19th, 1999.
An actual meaningful date in Star Wars history.
Honestly, though, like that was a moment, you know?
Yeah.
When I was joking before about how we love The Acolyte because we haven't seen it yet. I mean, like never has something been so true as that was for The Phantom Menace. The trailer and the expectations, those were like the best Star Wars movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it for this episode, our May the 4th special.
Did we get any Rui emails?
We got something from Rui. I'm so glad you said that.
Did we?
Yeah. So Rui hit me up on Instagram. I had posted something. I had posted our favorite character from The Acolyte that we haven't seen yet, Jackie Lawn.
Sure.
Played by, you always remember her name.
Daphne Keene.
Rui says, she will turn to the dark side and become a Sith. She has that Sith look. You heard this first from me.
That Sith look?
Yeah.
What's Sith look?
Yeah, what's Sith look, Rui? Was she wearing a Bruins t-shirt or something? I think the thing is, turning Sith is on the table for anybody in this show.
Well, it's on the table, but within 100 years of The Phantom Menace.
Mm.
Yeah. That would probably be a private thing that, you know, not a lot of people hear about, because they would have known.
Right.
They wouldn't. The Sith have been gone for millennia. Shut up, Kia D. We just lost one 100 ago.
The delegitimization of Ki-Adi Mundi continues. I think he was right all along. Well, look, he was right as far as they knew.
He was right about nothing. Ask King Tom. He knows.
I mean, look. Given the current era of Disney Star Wars storytelling, they can kind of retcon anything. Like, you know, it could be that everybody believed, and even George Lucas, when he made The Phantom Menace, believed that there hadn't been any Sith for a millennium, right? But we know that they could. I mean, if this show is a really big success, we are absolutely going to get a lot more content in the 100 years preceding The Phantom Menace. Like, this is not going to be the only thing.
That's fine. I want that.
I want that too. I mean, I already want Acolyte
season 2. Give me fresh!
Two. Acolyte season 2 for sure. Season 3, 4, however many they want to do, as long as it's good. But I think we're going to see other stuff. Maybe the next animated series will be in that timeline. Like, who knows? And I think if that happens, just like, look, we thought there were no other Jedi besides Luke Skywalker during that whole period, and turns out there were like 87.
There are tons of them, and they all didn't show up.
And they all didn't show up to help Luke. But yep. They did come back to help Rey. No, they didn't even come back to help Rey. Those were just like the regular Dunkirk people who showed up. But I think they could do it. So, I mean, I think the whole thing they're setting up to is like, I think we're being led to believe that one person is bad on this show, and it could be somebody entirely different. I think that's going to be the whole thing. The mystery of like who is behind all this. A Phantom Menace, if you will. All right, Steve, we're not going to end.
Yeah, just end it.
Yeah, we just got to cut it. We just got to cut it.
Risa, die in here.